call is now being recorded.
Hello?
Hi, Julia. Did you hear the announcement that the call is being recorded?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay, good. That means that the call is being recorded, and so we'll have a podcast.
That's great. I think that'll make things much more efficient.
Now, can you see me, and am I upside down?
I'm checking right now. Let me see. No, you're perfect now.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, I'm just going to plug in my ear thing so that I don't hear you twice.
You know what I do? Well, you can do whatever you want, but I found what worked for me was when I just muted your sound, but hopefully I'm not echoing.
Sorry. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Yeah, you were going to tell me that you dimmed the voice on the...
Yeah,
the sound
I'm watching.
On.
Yeah, for you, when I'm watching you, I just mute the sound for you. But that's how I do it, so I can hear you on the phone, but I don't
right.
hear you twice
just,
on the.
It takes so many fingers for me to actually
I know.
Do anything there that.
No, there's too
it's
much.
Easier
yeah.
to plug in.
You're right. That's true. So you have a list of different things that you wanted to cover in tonight's little podcast live stream.
Yes. Yes.
So,
I have the list right here. I actually printed it up. I don't know if anybody can see it. But the first item on the list is objecting to someone saying, if you're not a medical professional, you should not say something is a cure when it's not. I don't know if I can make you see the listing.
I can see it.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus, I also have the email that you, I mean, it's, maybe this is more abbreviated, but I kind of saw the different points you had listed in the email as well from earlier.
Right. So, anyway, it's just something I heard this week, or rather saw in a Facebook posting. It's people objecting to saying, you know, if you're not a medical professional, you should not say that something is a cure if it's not a cure. Now, the implication there is if you are a medical professional, it's okay to say that something is a cure when it's not a cure.
Yes.
So I thought, well, maybe they misspoke. So I said, you know, it's not okay to say that something is a cure even if you are a medical professional.
No, it's not.
And they said, no, but it's different if you're a medical professional.
No, it's and not. There's many different types of medical professionals, and they don't know everything. Just because you're a doctor doesn't mean you are a, you know what I'm saying? Like, people have specialties. They have different life experiences. I don't know. I don't think that's accurate.
Yes. So, I don't know where this attitude is coming from. But it reminds me of a poem that somebody read to me when they were in high school. Maybe one of the other high school students wrote it. And it said, unless you really love me, don't say things you don't mean. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the thought, you know, the first thing that comes into mind is, why would you ever say things you don't mean?
Mm-hmm.
But there's this kind of idea that maybe if people are in love, they can say, oh, I think you're the most beautiful woman in the world, and not really mean it, but that's a way for them to say that they like you. However, there's something kind of wrong with that way of thinking. You should not say something you do not mean anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with medical professionals. If they don't know if something is a cure, why would they say it's a cure?
Well, to me, it's kind of an interesting, like, because with medicine, sometimes they want to keep you in the system, and they don't want you to get a second opinion or a more holistic opinion. Well, look at this, like when some people have cancer and they look into holistic treatments, they're solidified for that. But I think that should be somebody's right to explore other options.
Sure.
Yeah, but they are vilified. Like, they're told that if you don't do chemotherapy, but chemotherapy doesn't always have... I mean, I just think if you're an adult, you should have the right to make your own decisions about your health.
Yes, and you should have the right to ask questions. So with chemotherapy, maybe it will help, maybe it won't, but we don't talk very much about what happens if you do survive after chemotherapy, because you'll never be the same.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, at least for a lot of people, it's not the same. So they survive, but then they're like they're survivor of a trauma, and they're not allowed to say that they were traumatized by the treatments. You know, they're just supposed to be grateful that they, you know, that they're alive. And there might be another option that might help them go into remission. It might not be a cure, but actually none of this is a cure. And the really good doctors will tell them it's not a cure, it's just remission.
That's true.
So, but that's cancer. There are lots of other things that are not as life and death kind of things, where something just recently came out in the Lancet that said people live longer if they have a high intake of fat, and they live less long, you know, and this was a study. Obviously, it was done statistically, and they made sure that there was statistical significance to the various groups and the differences. But the overall thing is that that's exactly the opposite of what the medical profession has been saying for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So all sorts of people who may have taken medical advice because it was given to them by professionals, well, they may have gotten the short end of the stick, not necessarily that they dropped dead immediately from taking the advice that they were given, but maybe they got a shorter life.
Mm-hmm. No, that could happen.
So, and right now, if you say to someone, you know what, you should have a higher fat intake. You shouldn't be afraid of that. It's actually sugar and carbs that are most dangerous for you. Whatever your condition is, like diabetes or, you know, the chances of getting cancer if you're on a high-sugar diet are higher. But even if all you're trying to do is lose weight or reduce hypertension or something like that, then all of the indications are that more fat in your diet would actually be good for you, and fewer carbs and certainly refined sugar would be, you know, that would be a good thing to reduce your sugar intake.
There's too much refined sugar in food, honestly.
What was that?
There's too much refined sugar in most foods.
Yeah, yeah.
You see at the store nowadays. I mean, everything has added sugars to it, so.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, but if you tell that to someone who, say, is already under treatment for heart disease or something serious, they will say, you know, you're right, but I'm already under a doctor's care, and he told me I can't have that. So it might be right for the average person, but it's not right for me with my diagnosis. But in many cases, if they actually read the articles, it would be right no matter what the diagnosis is. And they need to talk to their doctor about that. And their doctor needs to read the latest literature, and often they don't.
Yeah, because doctors aren't always nutritionists. That's the difference, you know. Or dietitians. You kind of have to do your own research, though, and read more articles on your own, I think, if you want to know about these things. So.
Right.
But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt what you were saying. You were continuing with that. Can you hear me? Maya, are you still there?
I am still there, but I'm actually having a little bit of trouble hearing you on my phone. Let me try to see if I can up the volume on the phone.
Okay.
Okay. I'm let's just continue the conversation, see if I hear you better.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you earlier. You were talking about the diagnosis and everything, so I was going to let you continue whatever you were saying about that.
Yeah, no, so anyway, the position that they took was that if somebody is a medical professional, you can later sue them for malpractice, whereas if somebody gives you advice and they're not a medical professional, you can't sue them for malpractice. But that's, you know, we're talking about your life and your health. Is that what you want to do, follow the advice of somebody who gives you bad advice and then sue them for malpractice after you're dead? Or do you just want to find out what the truth is and live as good a life as you can?
Yeah, you probably should do your own research, find out the truth on your own, not just follow something because it's diagnosis from a doctor. Because if it's a general practitioner, especially, they're more into general practice. They don't know about nutrition. Or if they're a general practitioner, they might not know about dermatology conditions. Like, it can be very detailed. General practitioners just do a lot of generalized. And you should always get a second opinion and do your own research, for sure. Plus, I feel like, I know it's the big thing, like people say, oh, big pharma, that they're always criticizing it. But it's true. They do like to keep people on medications. It's a business in this country, you know. That is a business.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a business.
So, sorry, continue on with what you were saying. I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, no, you weren't. It's just, I'm not sure that I'm hearing you as well as I did on the phone previously. I don't know if it's because we're doing the podcast.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me see if this volume is high. See, this is strange. Okay. I turned up the volume. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can hear you a lot better.
Okay, maybe it was my phone then. That's so strange. This is an older phone, and I think it was on pulse instead of dial tone. That's,
oh.
Yeah, that could be the reason. That's kind of funny.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, it just seems to me that there's this attitude, and I know this person isn't a medical professional. You know, sometimes you suspect, oh, well, if they're a doctor, they just don't want their authority questioned. But this is more like an ordinary person who just wants to be reassured that if they listen to a doctor, they'll be okay, and that's why they don't want to have to listen to anybody else, you know?
Yeah, that's not good. Like, every doctor that I've ever seen that was credible, they would say get a second opinion, see a specialist, do your own research, like be your own research person. That's what I have always heard from really good doctors. They're like, I may know many things, but I'm always learning new things, and they don't want to limit you to only certain things that they've heard, because there's many different illnesses that people haven't heard of that one specialist or somebody in a certain field of science may have. Well, years ago on Unsolved Mysteries, there was this case where this woman's children, they kept dying, and they were accusing her of poisoning her children, and she actually went to prison for it. They said that she was putting poison in the bottle, but then finally, when this episode aired, there was a specialist who recognized all the symptoms that her children were suffering from, and they were able to call in the call center and say no, that this child had a certain illness. So, but see, these doctors, they didn't know that, and they accused her of poisoning her own children.
Yeah, that's terrible. And it's terrible that we live in a society that doesn't trust a mother to give the best possible care to her child. So right now, if something happens to a child, the first person they accuse is the mother or the father. And that's just kind of an aside, but that happens too much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I think the better the doctor, and specialists are usually better educated in some ways, the better is the doctor, the more they're willing for you to bring in articles, for you to read journals, for you to read the latest medical text. I remember, bringing in a textbook on something that I was grappling with and showing it to my doctor and saying, well, you said this, and it says that. And he looked at the copyright page of the book, and he said, oh, you're right, because yours is the newest, the newest edition of the book.
That's good.
Yeah, Yeah. No, I mean, I've had good doctors. I'm not saying that all doctors are bad.
Oh, no. There's some really good doctors, believe me. I know. But I feel like the good ones want you to do your own research. They want you to seek out a specialist. They encourage you to do all those things. I would be apprehensive of anybody who has seen a doctor saying, no, like, you're fine, don't worry about it. But I don't think that there's too many doctors like that, hopefully.
No. But anyway, we should hold everybody accountable. Obviously, you shouldn't go around telling people that you've got the cure to cancer when you haven't got the cure to cancer. And it doesn't matter whether you're a doctor or not. You shouldn't do that.
Oh, no, nobody should do that. There are people that were pulling scams doing that back on Hub Pages and other websites, like, years ago. I have seen that. But I'm deviating. So anyway, continue on with what you were saying.
No, that's the whole point. But I don't know. Sometimes I get into these seemingly pointless arguments with people, and I don't know if it's a language thing, a logic thing, or a culture thing. But why would you want to say, unless you're a medical professional, don't say something's a cure if it's not a cure? Why would you add that proviso there?
I wouldn't, personally, but maybe for me it's a little bit different because I am friends with people who are in the medical field, so they know things and they encourage people to do their own research. They encourage people to see a specialist. They encourage you to be your own advocate always. So I've always been told, you know, something different to seek out more information, not to just say, oh, because my doctor said so, like, I should go with that.
Yeah. So okay, that was that particular topic.
Okay.
You were going to tell me something about Steemit and why you decided not to go with that.
Okay, I looked at Steemit. I didn't like the layout. First off, you had to apply to be approved to be part of the site. And I've never liked these kind of sites where you have to apply to be approved because, to me, it makes me feel like, do they not have their act together right away? Like, why should you have to apply to be approved? I feel if the site has their act together and they're open to the public, you should be able to apply right away and start writing. It shouldn't be that complicated. So that in the beginning was kind of a turnoff. And then when I looked at it, it just reminded me of Bubble Ooze and several other content farm sites that I had contributed to in the past where you would be paid out maybe the first year or the first few months, and then as time progressed, you wouldn't get paid. And then I also was looking at some of the content on Steemit, and it seemed like people were posting, like, different propaganda, like government propaganda for different countries, and they were arguing with each other. I just saw a lot of really kind of content that I didn't think was that great. So it kind of turned me off a little bit. I don't know. Maybe some people have a good experience with it, but it doesn't sound like something that is sustainable. It sounds like Bubble Ooze, where you'll get paid to post something. But how do we know 10 years from now it's still going to be around? You know, it doesn't sound like a sustainable platform.
Well, for those people who don't know what Bubble Ooze was, it was a site that tried to capitalize on our socializing.
Mm-hmm.
So it said it was a social media site where they would pay us for getting people to like our stuff. And it was really strange. It was different from Hub Pages. Hub Pages, people were supposed to come from the outside, people who were not writers, and we were selling them information. We could also sell them products through reviews and things of that sort. But there was a difference between being a writer and being a reader. And of course, we could read each other's articles, but we didn't expect to make money off that. We weren't making money off each other. And in this, on Bubble Ooze, basically, they were selling us to advertisers, and they're saying, well, the stuff these people are writing is not any good, so we'll get them to write really short articles, just so they can socialize with each other, and then we'll have ads, and they'll notice our ads, while they're socializing, but it really has nothing to do with the quality of their writing. I think that's what they were thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, too. Red Gage was kind of like Bubble Ooze, but Red Gage was a little bit better because they used to have a daily raffle where if you posted content and then you tweeted it, you could win a $25 gift card. I won it like four times, so I was really roped in by Red Gage at first for the first year, but then they stopped paying out as of 2013, but I logged in there last year, and it said that my account was still active, but I haven't earned anything on there since 2013, but then there's other people that say they still earn on there, and they're still withdrawing the money, but I guess they just decided to stop paying me.
That's
they didn't
very
really...
odd.
Yeah, and I felt kind of strange. I was like, well, why? Like, why does some people... And then there's some people, they've made thousands of... But it's kind of like Bubble Ooze. It's very strange, but they're still there. Like, they're not gone.
And on Bubble Ooze, what happened was, first of all, they wanted to make this a cult thing, and they had this guy who was their founder, and his name was Arvind, which is funny because it's very similar to the guy in the LP now who says all this stuff against parents sending their children to school, but it's not exactly the same name, but just very similar.
Yeah, it's a very
similar. And he said he was going to save us all. You know, he had this great idea, and we were going to be liberated through writing on that site. I don't know if you've read any of his, you know, stuff, but it was pretty crazy. And then there was a set of rules that you didn't know what the rules were, you know. But if you didn't get paid, it must be because you broke one of the rules.
I remember that, and I didn't like that because it seemed like a got, like, okay, I went on there. Like, I had been on there for a year, but I kind of ignored it. And then I went on there, and it seemed almost like a high school gossip site or something because they're like, so-and-so posted something bad, so you shouldn't talk to them. And I was like, really? Is that professional? Like, I just found it so unprofessional.
Well, no, it's just, so I posted something explaining copyright. And I explained that copyright violation is not the same as plagiarism, and plagiarism is not the same as copyright violation because you could actually cite someone, but if you copied too much of their material, you might be copyright violating. Whereas plagiarism, it might be out of copyright entirely. It could have been written thousands of years ago, but it's plagiarism if you pretend that you wrote it when you didn't. Okay, so I explained all of that, but Arvind did not agree.
What?
Never mind that I have a law degree, so I do know what I'm talking about. So he did not like that article. Anyway, what started to happen was you would sometimes not get paid, and then but other people did get paid, and then the excuse was you must have broken a law, a rule of the site, and no, they can't spell out all the rules because that would be too hard. So you just take it on faith. And I was starting to notice that it was kind of like living in a totalitarian regime, you know, because you don't know what the laws are, but you might break them and get in trouble.
Strange. I kind of stopped posting on there after when I saw all that, like just the people saying, well, so-and-so did something. It was very unprofessional, and it does sound like a totalitarian regime. If you can't know what the rule was that you broke, or it's just some arbitrary rule. I heard somebody said, that they felt they weren't treated fairly, and then they got deleted or booted from the site just for saying that. I don't know. It made me think.
Well, no, at first they actually encouraged us to, every time we got a payout, to write about that.
Yeah.
And then they told us that we weren't supposed to be writing about that, but they didn't say the rule changed. They just we were supposed to just know when it was not okay.
Yeah, there was this one guy. He said, like, early on, he claimed, I don't know, that's just what he said, that he was deleted off the site. So maybe, like, early on there were some people, because according to him, like, this was in the very beginning. He said something that they didn't like, so he posted about it, and they told him to leave. And this was in the beginning, but maybe he's just complaining. I don't know what his issue was.
I don't know, because when I joined, people were doing this all the time. So it was very strange. But anyway, eventually they just disappeared. They closed their site. So they don't exist mm-hmm. anymore.
Yeah, I went on it like the last few weeks before they left. And I guess one of the people who's moderating it, she goes, well, I haven't heard from the owner of the site in a while, but it's okay, we'll be paid soon. And it was really strange, like, she was posting things. I don't know. It didn't make any sense. I was like, it sounds like they're going out, and then the site was gone. And
yeah, and they even had, like, an excuse for why it happened. It was just the changing times. It was just no longer possible to make it work.
No, I don't think the thing was ever possible. I feel like Bubbleloos, it just, the
idea. It was a bubble. It was a bubble that was just burst.
Yeah. The same thing kind of happened even with more of the higher end content sites like eHow. They used to pay us $15 an article to write about various topics. I mean, they were real picky about all this. But it turned out that after a couple of years, they weren't making money anymore with Google Ads, as everybody once did. So then they stopped offering the ability to earn money that easily on articles, and they pared down like the amount of articles that you could write, and you had to apply to different niche sites. And then they'd have very arbitrary reasons for why you might not be approved to those sites. So it went from having many possibilities to write for them to just like there was nothing left anymore. And a few people, I guess, made it into the niche sites, but most of the people were just let go. And that was one of the higher end ones. And then even with Hub Pages, I feel like now, yeah, they're for writers, but it seems like you really have to play their game to continue earning a large amount of money there. Like, you kind of have to be following their rules all the time, whatever those are, like being part of their program. And I don't really like that. I don't like things that are really rigid like that, I guess.
Yeah, no, it doesn't give scope to whatever talent you have, whatever topic you want to write about.
Yeah.
What I loved about it was that you could be an expert on several different things.
Mm-hmm.
You could write about several different things that you're interested in, and you didn't have to have a niche that you fit into.
Oh, I used to love that about HubPages, too, when I first joined many years ago. It's just over time how it's changed. And then if you go back and you had an article that you know was getting traffic at one time and there was nothing wrong with it, and now they're telling you that you need to do all these different things to it so they can add it to this new niche site, I'm not going to do that, because if I was going to put that much work into something, I could put it on my blog or post it on PubWages on the site that you have, and I feel I'd get more out of it than
right.
over on HubPages. But that's just but Steemit, I don't like the layout of their site. I just feel like it's really clunky looking and too reminiscent of what happened with Bubbleloos. So I don't think I'm going to try that site. It's not something that I see as being sustainable in the long run.
Yeah.
And same with Patreon, too. I looked into Patreon, and I guess if you have a really large following, maybe that's another option. Because, yes, your followers can tip you. But I was noticing some people, they have many, many followers. Like this one man, he has 158,000 followers. He's a comedian from Australia, but he's only making $783 a month on Patreon, which might sound like a lot, but when you think about how many followers he has and he's only making that amount, it just doesn't sound like, and it's not sustainable either, because it's basically just a tip jar. Like, if they like your work, they tip you. So you're not really even selling a product. It's basically just like a tip for them to say, oh, we appreciate what you're doing. So I don't really think I'm going to continue with Patreon either. Both.
Yeah,
I don't like either of those from what I've seen.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. However, you know, Facebook is a bit iffy too right now. I don't know if you heard about what happened to Austin Peterson and his campaign recently on Facebook.
Yeah, you told me that he was booted, like, again. Is this the second time, or was this earlier in the year?
It wasn't exactly booted. He's banned. He's in Facebook jail for another 30 days because he was giving away an AR-15 as part of his campaign. But this time he was very careful. He thought, well, maybe they object to pictures of AR-15s because mm-hmm. they think there's something wrong with that. So he drew an AR-15. It wasn't even a very good drawing. Because he thought maybe, you know, I'm not going to show you the AR-15 I'm going to give you. I'm just going to show you this picture, and you can enter your name in the raffle.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he said he was going to vet the people. You know, if somebody won it, he'd make sure it was somebody.
And always people that are interested in that are going to be applying anyway, so why does it really matter? I don't know. Like, I don't
No, the thing is, this is part of his campaign. It's part of his Second Amendment position.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
if Facebook wants to stop him, of course they can. They're private.
Yeah.
You know, they're a private company, and they can have
whatever
policy
that.
They want to. But then why would we want to bring our business to them? You know, why would...
Wouldn't. Because they don't respect, like, the Constitution. You know, they don't respect the Second Amendment for people. I mean, I personally, I have no interest in owning guns, but I respect, you know, people who want to, like, their right to bear arms. Like, I respect that. So I don't understand, like, what's the problem with his raffle. Like, I don't know. He was vetting everybody, right? So it seems okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's not going to give it to somebody who's going to go out and do something bad with it.
Yeah, so I don't understand, like, why people are upset. I don't know.
Well, people are not upset. It's Facebook.
It's Facebook. But somebody reported it, I wonder, initially. That's why he got banned. I don't know.
Well, you know, I don't think we can blame the people who reported it. If Facebook were okay, you could report it till you were blue in the face, and they would say, well, he can do what he wants on his page, and you can do what you want on your page, and we don't care.
Yeah.
So this whole business about how you can report somebody when you don't like what they say, it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can have your own private club where you can do that, and if that's what Facebook is, then why are we all on it? You know?
Mhm. Yeah, that is. So, like, he's kind of questioning that, and then other people are, too. So, is there another alternative for you? Like, if...
Well, I see. I thought maybe Steemit would be it, but I guess it's not.
I don't feel like it is. I mean, you can look into it and see what you think, but I didn't like at first how you had to wait all those days to be approved. Like, to me, like, why do you have to wait to be approved to be on this social network? And then... just some of the things I saw people posting, it just felt like they were kind of fighting with each other a little bit. Maybe there's more freedom of speech on there, though. Maybe if you're looking to have more, maybe he could try posting his raffle there. Maybe it would work out. I don't know, but
yeah.
I just didn't really care for it. But I'm coming from a different perspective. I'm not really posting, like, lots of political things. I was looking for another, like, revenue stream. For myself, that's how I was approaching
it. I understand. But you know what? I never intended to join Facebook just to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
It was recommended to me when I started to publish books, and I was still publishing children's books at that time. It wasn't even my adult novels.
Mm-hmm.
And when I published, I think it was Ping and the Snarkly People. I was looking for a place where I could share it with a lot of people and
mm-hmm.
hoping to make sales.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Somebody recommended Facebook. They said, you need to be on Facebook. So.
I think it can be good. It seems like if you can get a page, like an independent page where you get a lot of likes, it can translate well. But I feel like if it's just for your friends on Facebook, in my experience, I don't feel like they're really following what people are posting, like, for their blogs or their books or even their services. I think with the friends group, it seems like people just want to, like, share pictures, or they're sharing something that another business has created, and they're, like,
mm-hmm.
giving free advertising to
food. This happens all the time. I have family members who will share memes with me, and when I point out to them, you know, there's somebody making money off of that, you know, they'll say, I don't care, I just like that meme.
Yeah, and it kind of, like, today, I finally had to say something when I saw that one with cute puppies, nice, cute puppies. And then this man was really, he was upset. He's like, but you know, they're doing this thing to the puppies. And I don't think the page cares because they're just posting about dog food. And then on top of that, I went to their website and it wasn't structured very well, but apparently maybe they sell something because they have 450 shares for this one picture of a puppy that everybody was sharing.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't really understand how advertising works. I don't understand the funnel concept. I think that all of those cute puppy, cute kitten types of sites are part of the funnel structure for selling, and I don't really understand how it works. So somebody tried to tell me, somebody was trying to help me. But, I mean, even when I was trying to help my father was, he manufactured flight simulators. Mm-hmm. And the flight simulator was manufactured by us, and it was FAA approved for currency on instrument flight. And so we got the people from Flying Magazine, which is a trade magazine. This is a picture of the simulator. So we got them to do an article about us, and they said, why don't you buy some advertising? So we bought advertising, and the result of the advertising was that there was this card. Are you okay?
Oh, I'm okay. I was just moving around. Sorry. Go ahead. Keep going. I was listening.
Yeah. Well, there was this card that we got. Well, the readers of the magazine got a card, and if they were interested in any of the products that were advertised in the magazine, they could circle, you know, the number of the product, and they would give their address. And then the magazine would send us a list, and it was, like, printed, this long list of people who had – all they did was they circled. They filled in a circle. That wasn't a lot of work. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. That's...
So – and then we were supposed to send them brochures for our product, and the brochures – brochures were very expensive, and stuffing those envelopes with brochures was very work intensive. So we sent out all those brochures, and nobody ordered anything.
Oh.
So we decided, oh, well, but we did get some sales from the article that they wrote. You know, people actually called, people actually wrote. They went to an effort. But those, the things that came from the advertising, we didn't know how to use them to get sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a way to waste our money and our time.
Yeah, that's
so we stopped advertising. So then what they did was when they had the list of products for aviation, they didn't list us because we weren't advertising.
Hmm.
So maybe there's a funnel. Maybe there's a way where you can get people who are interested to let you know that they're interested and somehow keep sending them more and more information, and they'll eventually buy something. But I don't have an MBA. I didn't go to business school, and I don't understand how it works. And it seems like a lot of those sites are set up, you know, to – get people somewhat interested in puppy dogs, and then you'll sell them dog food? How does that work?
I don't know, but I'm guessing there's something like a ranking. Like, okay, I mean, I don't have an MBA either, but this is just my educated guess because I have pretty good intuition and I'm pretty good at figuring out technology and things like that. I feel like if you buy Facebook ads, and I've seen this with myself, it seems like all of a sudden your page just starts getting more likes. Whereas if you have a page where you didn't buy any ads for it, that page isn't getting any likes. So
yeah, but that's not helping you. I mean, okay.
No,
this
it's
is,
not.
Yes, I've done that too. I've gotten more likes because I paid to get things seen, which normally would have been seen before they started this advertising business. But that does not translate into sales at all. So why should I, when I'm not making any money off this, put money into it?
I wouldn't personally, but I'm wondering, like, with, like, these cute puppy dogs and these cute kitties, maybe because it's being shared so much after an ad was pushed, I wonder, like, if it's somehow making, like, does Facebook just give priority to certain sites that are buying more ads? Like, I don't really understand the rationale either behind these sites, but I feel like they're profiting in some way if it's being shared that often. But maybe
I'm... Yeah, no, I'm sure they are, but let me in on the secret.
I want to know the secret, too, but I'm going to keep looking because when I am curious about something, it just keeps me up at night. I'm like, well, why is that? And now I have to know. I have to get to the bottom of it because I feel like there's something more to it. And I just, I don't mean to go on about it, but I just wish people would think more about what they share, like, as opposed to just sharing anything. Like, maybe just, like, look at the site and see, like, what are you sharing, you know? It might be cute, but do you want to share something just because it's cute? I don't know. That's just my take.
Yeah.
But anyway, you have something else, too, on the list that we were going to, because I don't want to get away from your list. What was the next thing that you were going to?
Well, you know, just good news. Actually, when I made the list, there were only two eggs that the cockatiels had, but now they have three eggs.
Oh.
And it's kind of amazing. And one of the things about it is I did not realize how much the males helped, you know, when it comes to birds. I always, whenever I saw a bird sitting on a nest, I always thought it was the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently found out that they seem to share that half and half.
Wow.
And how I know is also kind of funny because they look exactly the same. I've never been able to tell them apart. So we call the male king, and we call the female queen, and sometimes we can obviously tell. Obviously, the one who laid the egg is the female, and
yeah.
We can tell in other situations which one is the male, you know, when it is male-specific behavior. But most of the time, there's no way to tell except for this. He is much more outgoing. And he sings more. He's more social. She tries to stay away from people. She likes him, but not us. And she's much more skittish. So when I started seeing that whoever it was showing me the eggs, and kind of, he was almost, he was really proud that he had all these eggs. Then I realized, hey, that's not her. She just would hiss at me.
It was him. He was like proud of the egg, and he's like, look at this, I have an egg. That's so sweet. Wow.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the females are a little bit more like that with the cockatiels, or if this is just the personality of these two. That would be interesting to learn more about the cockatiels. So have you read more about that?
I read up about it a little bit, and in general, the males have to be more outgoing because the females get to choose their mate, and so the males have to be working on their song and working on making themselves seem more attractive, which in some cases for some birds is making their plumage more attractive, but these two, they look exactly the same.
They're very cute. They look like they have, like, these little painted-on cheeks, like little clowns. They're so cute. Like, I've never seen a cockatiel up close until I started watching your videos because I just wasn't interested. Like, it wasn't a topic, but after I watched it and I saw it sitting on the eggs, I was like, oh, that's so charming, and it made me want to learn more about them. It was like unexpected.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the first time I heard of cockatiel, well, the first time I saw a picture of a cockatiel wasn't even a real live cockatiel. Was way back when my daughter was little, and we used to watch Jap animation, you know, animation from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one series. It was called Bleach, and all of them are about people who come back from the afterlife, and they have to kill ghosts who have no souls. You know, the plot is kind of weird. But so one episode featured a soul that was trapped in the body of a cockatiel. And I didn't even know that was a cockatiel. And I thought, what a strange bird. It looks like a clown. And I didn't think that was a real bird. You know, I thought that was probably part of the Japanese animation,
like
kind of exaggeration of things. So when Sword got the cockatiels, I was really surprised. Wow, that looks just like that bird.
Aww.
In the show.
That's so awesome, I think. That's really neat that they... I like the way they look. They're really pretty, and their little songs, and how outgoing the male one is, and how sweet she is when she sits on the egg. But I guess they both sit on the eggs. But that was her, though, at the end of that one video where it was just two sitting on the eggs. Was that Queen?
Well, I'm not sure. If it was in the daytime, it was probably him. What she seems to be doing is whenever she needs to lay an egg, then she spends a lot of time on that.
Okay.
And in the evening is when she goes to nest, or brood is what they call it. And in the morning, he takes up his duty. So I think that might have been him.
Oh, because it seems like, oh, look at me. It's very,
yeah,
I like that.
Exactly. You know, and the mouth was open. It was like a very open move. It was not...
Mm-hmm. Hello?
I'm still here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it went dead for a second. Like, I didn't hear anything. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think there's something a little odd about our connection. It could be because of Google Voice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different from the other times.
But it'll be great for the podcast, I think, to have that.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. I hope it goes well for the podcast. So the other thing on my list was about the neurodevelopmental disorders, which are called NDDs for short, because it's so hard to say neurodevelopmental disorder. So I was reading this article, and it's actually about language assessment for children with a range of neurodevelopmental disorders across four languages in South Africa.
Hmm.
But the thing that caught my eye on that was this one. It's really not on point, but they just said it, and it really struck me. It says, infant mortality rates in these countries are decreasing and leading to a higher prevalence of neurodevelopmental disorders. So I had to read that twice just to try to figure out what – do they really mean that?
Mm-hmm.
Are they saying that it's – the lowering or the decrease in infant mortality that is causing a higher rate of neurodevelopmental disorders?
Mm-hmm.
Why would that be?
Hmm. That's
Are
a good
you
question.
Surprised to hear that?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I had never heard anything like that until you showed me when you were reading that article. I had never heard any research like that, but I guess this is another good reason to continue reading different studies. And so what are your thoughts behind that? Like, what do you have, like, some ideas about why that might be happening?
Well, okay, one thought is that infant mortality might have a culling effect for human population, and that's for
mm-hmm.
all humans. And that would be if, for instance, those children who were going to have neurodevelopmental disorders before they even manifested that would somehow be weak enough to succumb to natural diseases that wouldn't kill other children. But I don't really think that that's always the case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the whole story because a lot of the infant mortality that has been reduced is due to childhood diseases, right?
Mm-hmm. True.
And how do we reduce childhood diseases?
With vaccinations and...
Yeah, I think so. So that might indicate that we need to work on that vaccination thing, because if that is introducing neurodevelopmental disorders into populations that never had them before, then there really is something bad in those vaccines.
That could be problematic. Well, I mean, even if you just look at the flu vaccine this year, it only had like a 10% effective rate, and people still get, like, just with even basic ones like that, they always say get your flu shot, but people sometimes get the flu shot and they still get sick. So why? And some, I don't know, like, and I've read about some of the things in the flu shot. I just don't really want to get, I mean, I got vaccinations when I was a kid, but as an adult, I don't want to get the flu shot. And some people think that's horrible if you don't get the flu shot. And I don't really agree with that.
Well, yeah, I was vaccinated also as a child. I'm older than you are, so I got different vaccinations. I bet you were not vaccinated for smallpox, right?
No, I was actually vaccinated for smallpox because the thought was I had older doctors. So, I did have the smallpox vaccination. I can't say everybody else would have, but my doctors were a little bit older, so maybe that was why. But I did have that one.
Oh, well,
for sure.
Good. Okay. So I was vaccinated for smallpox and rubella, but I was not vaccinated for measles, mumps, and chickenpox.
Yeah, I wasn't vaccinated for that either. I don't think I was vaccinated for rubella, but no, I had to get like the tetanus shot. I had to get the smallpox one. So those things. But I know now there's some other ones, right, that the kids have to have in middle school.
Yeah.
I think.
Right, and they're putting them together. The MMR vaccines is mumps, measles, and rubella. So while I was vaccinated for rubella, I was just in time for that. You know, it was just a few years earlier. It wasn't available. But I wasn't for the mumps, the measles, chickenpox, and my daughter was not vaccinated for smallpox. So she has absolutely no immunity to smallpox if that were to ever break out again.
We had it here in Redlands.
Really?
Yeah. A couple of years ago, somebody had smallpox when they were at the hospital. And then they left the hospital. They went to Target. They went to a chocolate shop. And I guess some people had smallpox and they went to Disneyland and everybody was panicking because all these people, it was some younger people, I guess, that had not had the vaccination and they were able to figure out who it was and people were panicking about it. But there's really nothing you can do after the person's been in that store, I guess. I mean, you can't really change after the fact.
The smallpox? I mean, do you know?
They didn't have a vaccination for it. So I'd have to read up on it, but it was occurring again here in California. Like a lot of people were not vaccinating their children. So
are you sure it's the smallpox and not?
Yeah, it was definitely smallpox. I'll have to send you the article, but yeah.
Okay, because see the whole idea, the medical profession thought that they had killed the smallpox, so it was never going to come back.
Nope.
So that's why they stopped vaccinating.
Yeah, it was actually, I can definitely, I need to pull up the article because I remember that day, like, smallpox and very interesting, but anyway, yeah, I thought so. And I'm not saying measles, right? No, I thought it was, okay, maybe I'll look and I'll see later. I don't want to speak. I thought it was smallpox, but maybe it was measles, sorry. I'm not a medical professional. Don't get mad at me, everybody.
Smallpox would be really terribly serious.
Yeah, I think it was the measles. Yeah, it was the measles.
Okay.
I apologize, guys.
Yeah, no, that would be very, very serious. I did hear that somebody had exhumed some corpse or something that it had the smallpox, some scientists who wanted to study the smallpox had exhumed an old corpse and gotten it out of it. But generally speaking, it's supposed to be killed. It's supposed to not be available for us to get sick with. But if it were to come back, I have been, you know, I was vaccinated against it, and my daughter was not.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, my daughter never had to suffer through measles or mumps or chicken pox even.
Oh, really? She never got the chicken pox? I remember the chicken pox.
Well, because she had to, they made me vaccinate her or they wouldn't have allowed me to send her to kindergarten.
Oh, yeah, that's true. By then, you had to get all those.
I could have homeschooled her, but I wanted her to learn English. One of my problems was that we speak Hebrew at home, and I wanted her to be socialized and have that English experience, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know what you're saying, because that way she gets to interact with other kids and can speak English when she's at school, and then when she comes home, she can...
Yeah, because otherwise I would have been talking to her in English and Hebrew, and one of the languages would have gone by the wayside. You can't really do both.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. It seems like when there's a parent, like I was noticing even with some of these expat children, like I would have thought because they grew up in another country, like they would be speaking the native language, but it almost seems like some Americans when they're stationed abroad or even working abroad, they send their kids to an American school and they can speak some of the language, but they're still just speaking English.
Well, yeah. No, I could have been one of those people. The thing is, Asord and I were in Taiwan for the first 2 years of her life, and we had a nanny. The nanny spoke Mandarin to her.
That's amazing.
But I'm sure that she also heard Taiwanese because Taiwanese is really the native language, but the official language is Mandarin. And then I spoke Hebrew to her, and she was a little bit confused about some things because I was the only person who spoke Hebrew to her after my mother left after the earthquake. And, you know, my mother left when Sword was 6 months old. So, and then she didn't have any English at all. So if we had stayed there, I probably would have ended up sending her to the English school. That doesn't mean that she wouldn't have known Mandarin. She would have been a speaker of Mandarin, and she would have studied Mandarin in that school, too, because that would be required.
Yeah, they still do. That's true. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't. But I think in your case, you would have, influenced her with other languages, but I've just been noticing some people I meet, like, they are actually abroad, like, they're stationed in the military, and they have the opportunity where their kids could learn the language, like, they're growing up in Germany, but they just are going to an American school, they speak English fluently, and they barely speak any German. I just think that's interesting to have that opportunity to live in another country, but you basically are just living the American experience abroad. If you have that opportunity, I think it would be great to experience more locally.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I meant. Like, I just thought that was
interesting. Yeah, some of those people live on military bases, so they hardly ever go outside the base, so everybody they meet is speaking just English, and that might be part of the problem.
Yeah, but there are opportunities, like if you want to leave the military base on the weekend and go touring and things of that
nature.
Yeah,
but that's not the same. You know, the only way you can really learn a language is where you have to. So, for instance, I had a nanny who did not speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to speak to the nanny about Sword and what she was going to eat and how she was feeling that day and all this other kind of stuff, I had to try to do it in Mandarin. You know, I'm not saying my Mandarin was great. It was not. But
it forced you to.
I can tell you a story about that is, you know, the first nanny I had was a very nice lady, and she had a child of her own, just a few months older than Sword. And because I was speaking Mandarin so badly, I think subconsciously she thought I wasn't very smart or didn't know much about children or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So one day she brought me a bunch of booklets, you know, the kind that you get when you go to the doctor or you get them from a social worker or whatever, that basic child care. It was all in Mandarin. There was, you know. And so I thanked her very much, and then I thought about it because I was a little bit irritated, but then I thought about it and I realized it was a great opportunity for me and I should take this as a good thing. And so I had a tutor for Mandarin. I gave the, you know, I brought the booklets for my tutoring lesson, and I said, we need to study these booklets because they have the vocabulary that I need to have in order to talk to the nanny. So,
yeah.
And I actually learned something while reading the booklets. Of course, I was way behind because the booklets start with newborns, and by the time I got the booklets, Sword was 6 months old, so she wasn't a newborn anymore. But I learned something about jaundice. And this is also something that I think people need to know. We're not all exactly the same. And if you come from a different region, you might have, your baby might have different kinds of things happening to them during the first few weeks of life. Mm-hmm. And they don't tell you that. Like for the American doctors, they're not trained to say, well, you know, if it's a baby who's African American, maybe you'll see this and it's perfectly normal or you don't have to worry about it. And so, for instance, we had in our family a situation with a baby diagnosed with yellow jaundice, and it so like three days after birth or something like that, the baby was yellow and whatever, and the doctors turned it into a major big deal. When my daughter was born, and I was still in the United States, I went to an Indian pediatrician. And my daughter was released from the hospital very early, but the child that I'm thinking of in our family was released late because back in those days, the hospitals wanted to keep the mother and child in longer. But when my daughter was born, they were releasing really early. So I went to the first well care visit with the pediatrician, and she was a woman of Indian heritage. And she said to me, you know, your daughter is a little bit yellow, but it's okay. It's quite normal. Just make sure that she gets plenty of liquids, and unless it gets any worse, it's fine. It will pass by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so grateful because we'd had that other experience with a child in our family that had been really scary. I mean, nothing bad happened, but the doctors made such a big deal about it that it was scary. Mm-hmm. So I was in Taiwan, and I was reading, and it said, and of course, within 3 days of birth, in the booklet, in Chinese, it said, your child will be a little bit yellow, but it's okay. It's normal, and here's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So then I realized, wow, I'm Asian, you know?
Yeah.
And they all know this because, you know, but I didn't get to know that because, you know, when you're treated by an American doctor,
yeah,
and
they don't know the symptoms and things.
They
like
don't
that.
Know what's normal for you.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, and that's good. You learned that from reading that pamphlet, so that's pretty good.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. So you never know. When somebody hands you a pamphlet, even if you think you're beyond that, you might learn a lot from it.
Well, I'll have a new concept of pamphlets in the future. They usually kind of are annoying, but maybe I'll learn
something. They are. But, I mean, especially if they're a pamphlet from a different culture, then.
Yeah, if it's from a different culture, maybe you had the opportunity. Maybe it was just because it had certain information. It just turned out well in that case.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just another thing about medical issues, and we're not all the same. We each come from a different genome. There are things that are normal for one person that are abnormal for another person. And right now, for instance, even when they're talking about the age at which girls start, you know, become women, it varies.
Yeah, it does fluctuate from culture to culture quite a bit.
Right, exactly.
I think it has also changed over time, too, just because of the types of food that people eat and things like
that.
Yeah,
that's what they're saying. They're saying high nutrition. First of all, when they're saying high nutrition, that's code for obesity.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what they really mean. They don't mean the nutrition
exactly
is really
right.
better.
Oh, and, I don't think that.
And secondly, I I'm not sure that part of the reason that the average age of menarche has gone down is just because of that, mm-hmm. or even just because of hormones in the food that we eat, although there is that issue. I also think that people whose ethnic group came up in a warmer climate just tend to reach puberty earlier, and people in whose ethnic group, lived in, very cold, very, very cold climate would have to wait and reach puberty a little bit later. And I think some of that is genetically encoded. And as we become a more mixed culture, the average age goes down because we have more people from many different places in the world.
True. That's something that would make sense. But
yeah,
it's good to know a little bit about your background, which can explain different things at birth, like you were sharing with all that good information to have.
Right. Yeah. So that shows how Ancestry.com could help, I guess, with DNA information, because a lot of us do have Asian ancestors and we don't even know it.
Oh yeah. Well, a lot of people do, but especially since, I'm guessing because you were from Israel, you definitely have Asian ancestors.
Yes, definitely.
You definitely have it.
Yes, I definitely do. But you know what? People don't tend to associate that. So they think that Asian from Middle East is completely different from, say, Asian from Eastern Asia. But there are some things that are very similar.
There's a lot of similarities. And people in Turkey, when they take the ancestry DNA test, a lot of them have a high percentage of East Asian, actually like 10%, going back to the days of, people coming from the East, like the Silk Road and things like that. There's a lot of trade back and forth, so there's a lot of mixing in cultures. People think that, it's completely different with West Asia and East Asia, but no, the Central Asia is a very admixed group of people.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting information there, and I'm sure you're learning some things about your ancestry.
I have actually learned a lot of different things. One thing that I think is just really fascinating is when you go to look at the chromosomes, and you can see, which chromosome you inherited, from what group of people. Like, for instance, I can see, because my ancestors originally came from Lebanon, but they moved to that little village in Ansara, Syria, which is 10 miles from the border. But I have distant cousins in Lebanon, and on chromosome 22, or I believe, there's this segment that I have with three different cousins. They're all distant from the 1700s probably, but we still have that chromosome. So I'm like, that's interesting, how you could probably, if you want to get deeper into it, if you're a geneticist, say, study different parts of chromosomes and see how things are handed down through the generations and how certain siblings get one thing that the others might not inherit. So I find that very fascinating and intriguing. And just when you go into 23andMe, it'll tell you, if you get freckles, and it can show you, where, on the chromosome if you have a propensity towards that. So I do find it very fascinating. And just being able to know that this person's your cousin or a half-sibling, and some people want to say, a test can't tell you that. But, yeah, it can. You can take a test, and you can find out if you have a half-sibling or a cousin. And it's a very interesting, different world, that all these things that people never knew. For years, people were looking for their birth parents, and now they can find them. They take a test, and 2 months later, you can find out exactly who you are related. I find it very fascinating. Some people are not happy about this information coming out. A lot of birth parents, they don't want people to find this information out, but I hate to say it, there will be no closed adoptions anymore. People should just keep that in mind. With all the information coming out, I know that a lot of people are upset about that. They don't like that idea, but people just need to keep in mind, if they're going to give somebody up for adoption, that eventually the people will find out who their birth parents are. So I just think that's an interesting topic.
But yeah, I guess children have the right to know, and they have the right to know what their information, you know, for their health. They don't necessarily have the right to force themselves on a parent who doesn't want to
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that anybody should force themselves on that. I just think if you are going to give a child up for adoption, especially now, just know that 20 years from now, 40 years from now, they might find out who you were. I just hope people kind of recognize that information, like, or just don't get upset if now somebody's finding out who their birth. I just wouldn't be upset at those people who want information. They don't want to force a relationship on a parent. From what I've seen, they just want information about their, like, their ethnicity and things like that, or their health history, which I just feel people are entitled to know those things. But I always share. Some people won't, and I guess it's up to the individual person. But
yeah, some people are open and some people are closed. Some people just think, wow, I have another relative, and isn't that wonderful? You know, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's cool. Like, I think it's really awesome. I would say don't take those tests if you don't want to learn new things about your family. Like, if you're very closed-minded and you just want everything to be very a certain way, maybe those tests are not for you. It's an interesting topic. It can get kind of heated. So there's a lot of people that will block people if they just, like, email somebody that's a second cousin trying to find out about their birth parents. I guess some adopted people were blocked because they said they were adopted in the first email. And I guess there's, like, this whole code where you're supposed to not tell someone you're adopted first, which I find very intriguing, because I had people email me and not tell me they were adopted right away because they were afraid that I might block them too. But I wouldn't have done that. But it's just very intriguing.
That's really strange. I mean,
yeah,
why should
I think
it matter?
So. It shouldn't matter, but I guess some people are very insulted because they want their family tree to be a certain way and they take it personally. Even though they're not the parents of this child, they're probably just a second cousin to this person. They don't like the idea that, oh, their family tree might look different. Like, some people are very protective of these things, but to me it's just history and it's interesting to learn more about your history. I don't know how you can project a certain idea. I don't know. It can get to be a very heated topic over something that I just don't really think is that big of a deal, but that's just my take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, I don't mean to keep going on and on. Was there anything else on the list that we didn't get to that you wanted to address or anything?
Oh, well, I think we actually covered everything. I do have one more thing if you have time.
Oh, I have time for sure.
Okay, so it's actually something that I wrote about in the Theodosia blog on Blogspot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been looking at what are the popular videos on YouTube. And so I've discovered Jordan Peterson. Have you heard of him?
I haven't. Can you tell me more about him, since a lot of people probably haven't heard of him either?
Yeah. He's apparently he's a psychology professor from Canada.
Oh.
And right now he's very popular or unpopular, depending on what your politics are. And he's talking about he's kind of a conservative, which is unusual for a professor and a psychology professor. So he has a conservative social values, and he talks about the differences between men and women, among other things, and, you know, biological differences. And he was not really thrilled with the Me Too recent movement.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so
that,
I started watching
sense.
Him. Yeah?
I said that makes sense. I understand. I was going to say, even me, like, I think, and even people I know that call themselves feminists, they're getting tired of hearing this because you have these rich actresses. It just seems like a lot of it's like, I'm an actress and I wanted to be in that movie, but I had to do that role. But a lot of actresses would have walked away. I feel
yeah,
like
of course. I mean, if you believe in freedom of contract, you don't have to agree to do anything you don't want to do, but then they don't have to give you the job, and that's how it is.
Yeah. I just feel like it's kind of an entitled group of people that want to more attention for themselves, whereas, I don't know. Sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay, but what I want to talk about is actually not the Me Too thing. I'm just telling
yeah, yeah.
you who he is or what
oh,
I know
okay,
about
sorry,
him.
Sorry.
And I'll admit I don't know much about him because I only heard about him like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I'm a big fan from way back. And I don't agree with him on everything, but I don't disagree with him on everything either.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching one of his, and what's interesting about his videos is a lot of them are distributed through many, many YouTube channels. So I don't know if these people had permission to do that or they're just getting a lot of views from something they stole from somewhere else. But I've seen different things on different channels, and they have kind of like titles that sound very provocative, like What Do Women Want? Or, you know, Why Do Women Reject Men? And, you know, kind of, they sound really silly, the topic.
Yeah.
But then when you listen to the actual video, it's much deeper than that, and it's not like that at all. So it looks like whoever is publishing these videos is very savvy with clickbait, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the titles are very clickbaity, but... he is a psychology professor, so he's quite a bit deeper than that.
Yeah,
but,
definitely. I'm sure he is himself.
But this one video that I saw was not on that topic. It was actually on the topic of intelligence, and he had a guest on. So it was Jordan Peterson, and this is Peterson with an O, not an E at the end. So he's not related to Austin Peterson.
A different Peterson.
Yeah. And he's not young like Austin either. He's more like my age. And so he had this other professor who was about to retire who his name, I think, was Heyer, something like that. And he was an expert on intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were talking about how intelligence is considered to be highly heritable, and you can predict it despite environment. So they were talking, for instance, about the Head Start program. Are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with that program. I know a little bit about it. It's for some of the low-income children that can't afford to go to preschool, so they provide like a preschool type class environment for them.
Well, yeah, it's usually children that are thought to be at risk to be bad students later on, but it's before school starts. So the idea of the program was you give them a head start. Maybe they don't have parents who read to them at home. Maybe they don't have that kind of environment. So we will just give them free preschool kind of care, and we'll read to them, and we'll give them, you know, their ABCs and things like that. So when they go to kindergarten or first grade, they will know everything that a child in a different family might know. So they'll have a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were talking about – I actually know something about it because when I was 15 or so, I was in the Girl Scouts, and we volunteered to help with Head Start.
Oh,
so we went over there, and I thought that would be really fun. I wanted to read stories to the kids and stuff like that. But a lot of kids would not sit still long enough to have a story read to them. There was nothing wrong with them. They were perfectly healthy, beautiful children. And they were just a lot more athletic than what I was used to and a lot less willing to sit down and
they
be stationary.
Weren't used to having somebody read them a story, pretty much, it sounds like. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So I happened to have at home a child prodigy who was my brother. My brother is 12 years younger than I am. So I compared them, and he was really different. You know, he would sit still. He was already reading. He was doing math in his head. So I knew that they were different, but I didn't think there was anything wrong with them. They just they were so good at athletic things, and they were so social. They were very sociable, and they were very verbal, and there was nothing wrong with them. So it was kind of like they wanted us to go over there and turn them all into our little brothers. And, you know, that's everybody's different. Everybody develops in a different way and can do things differently and has different strengths and weaknesses. So that was my personal experience. Anyway, Peterson and his guest, who was an expert on intelligence, were sitting there talking about that, and they said, yeah, the Head Start program was supposed to help these at-risk children, but it did help them do better, like in first grade or second grade, but after that, they reverted to what they would have been otherwise, and they didn't end up being very good students. And they did tend to graduate. The ones who were in Head Start did tend to graduate from high school and did tend to go to college, but they just, you know, their scores, the test scores on the standardized testing were not any higher than they would have been had they not been in Head Start. So the only thing that Head Start did was it socialized them to be more inclined toward education, but it didn't make them any smarter, you know, in terms of IQ, if you think that IQ tests, you know, measure intelligence. Okay, so they were talking about this, and Peterson was talking about he knew somebody, he had a patient, you know, because he's a psychologist, that he treated who had, like, an IQ of 80 or below, and that person couldn't find a job, fold letters into envelopes, had trouble doing anything. And so Peterson was saying, you know, if your IQ is that low, you're really in trouble, and you're going to have trouble throughout your life. And then the expert on intelligence said, yes, now I'm going to say this. Every human being is valuable regardless of their IQ, but there's also something that I'm going to say that it's going to be very provocative, and that is I believe that now that we know that intelligence is heritable, highly you can get it through your DNA, that there are things that we can do because we now know how to manipulate DNA. And so if we know that somebody's DNA indicates that they're not going to be very intelligent, we could switch it around and we could maybe get them 20 IQ points higher. And I was listening to this and thinking there's something really wrong with that way of thinking. And it's not just ethical. You know, I do have ethical qualms with it.
Yeah,
but
it sounds a little scary to me. Like, what would they do to that child or the
yeah, because after all, every advantage is also a disadvantage. Every disadvantage is an advantage. So when somebody's not good at one thing, they're good at something else. And to play around with a person. But the point that I want to make is even not that. Okay, IQ tests are based on the mean and deviations from the mean. If you just get somebody to get a better raw score and lots of other people also get a better raw score, that's called the Flynn effect. It's actually happened. And the IQ test isn't really measuring your raw intelligence. It's processing how you do on these tests, and then it is comparing you to the general population. So what if your IQ is 100, that means you have, you know, you're in the mean. And then they're measuring standard deviations from the mean. And that means there will always be people who rank lowest. There will always be people who rank highest. And by correcting a person, if you take a person and you make them do better on the test, if you do that to all the other people, it's not going to fix the problem.
Nope.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It won't fix the problem. You're just kind of trying to correct it, but it's just like a Band-Aid is what it sounds like to me. Like, There will always
right.
be
people
that score
low. Right. It's just
low.
Exactly the same as saying we're going to change the minimum wage so the minimum wage is higher. And the moment you do that, that money is not worth as much, so it's the same.
Yeah, it's not. It seems like it's a corrective measure, but it's not going to really help anyone. There will always be people who score lower on an IQ test. There will always be people who score higher. You can't really change that.
Well, especially not when it's defined. That's how it's defined.
Yeah,
that's why I think that guy is not a genius. You know, he's not. He's an expert on IQ, but if he thinks he can do that, I mean, never mind the manipulation of DNA. I think that's really very science fiction-y and not
it
something
is.
You would really want to do ethically. But even if you could do that, it wouldn't solve the problem because the basic problem that they're struggling with is equality, and they're equating being the same as equality. But what we want is equal opportunity, and you never know when some skill that you have might come in handy and, you know, maybe even save the entire human race. And it, right now, it's not being tested for on an IQ test.
True. Yeah.
So I wrote about that on Theodosia and the Pirates on Blogspot.
Okay. Well, I will read that. But I do think nowadays, kind of just tying in with what you're saying, it seems like now if there's kids who do well at academics, sometimes they don't want to praise those kids as much as if that's being unfair to the kids who don't. But what's wrong with doing well at one thing? Like,
right.
And then those other kids you're talking about are athletic. Everybody has their own
right.
strong points. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's just acknowledging people for who they are.
Right.
You know, and accepting that we're all different. It's not a horrible thing.
Yeah, being different is, you know, that's part of life, and it's not a bad thing. You know.
But I guess it's not politically correct for some people. Some people feel that's not. I don't, because when I grew up, we still had people that got the top score on the test. They got an award for that. They worked hard. Or if you were in sports, you got a medal for doing well. But I hear now, like, I guess everybody gets a participation trophy. Like, that was one of the debates.
Well, yeah, they do. But you know what? The whole thing is unfair because actually, behind the scenes, everybody who's anybody knows who did really well and who didn't. So you're not sparing anyone, even the embarrassment of doing badly. Eventually, they're going to find out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, it's not good.
That doesn't seem to do anybody a favor. It seems, I don't know, when I grew up, being competitive was a good thing. Like, they used to encourage us to be competitive. But I wonder if now, maybe nowadays in some schools that would be frowned upon to encourage competition, to actually encourage people to do the best they could and to give recognition to the person who did the best in a certain subject or a certain sport. That was something that we were always encouraged to recognize. But I don't know if now I'm sure it still is, but it seems like now they're afraid it might hurt some people's feelings, but there's nothing wrong with doing well at something. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and different people excel in different areas, and sure, should be acknowledged.
So, but just because these people don't have a high IQ and they can't have a job, there are other things that they can do in life, maybe. Do you have thoughts on that, or did you want to save that for?
Well, I do think that these people are fine.
Yeah.
The man that he was describing with the 80 IQ also had some kind of problem with motor ability. But the people that I saw at Head Start, they didn't have any motor skills problems. They were actually ahead. I would say that if you were measuring certain skills, they were way, way ahead. And I'm sure that they, you know, they would be useful and make themselves useful and make a good living. It just doesn't happen to necessarily be academic.
Yeah, no, not everybody's meant to be academic. Some people are meant to be running a business, and they actually know nothing about academics, but you could be a plumber, be very unacademic, but be very good at what you do and make a lot of money. And
right.
Be an eighth grade dropout. I've heard about that, actually. Where I was growing up, there was, like, one of the best plumbers. I guess he didn't finish high school, but he was a very good business person. So,
well,
yeah,
plumbers are in demand, and it is actually a very important skill. And what with all sorts of people being sent to college for just so that the colleges can take advantage of, you know, student loans, we don't have enough people who are learning how to be plumbers.
Yeah. Yeah, that scares me, that whole thing with the student loan. They're pushing that. Maybe we can talk about that more another time, because I feel like that's something that they want people to be in debt. And that's
They want to enslave people, but they're doing it in this particularly sneaky way.
Yeah, and that's not good at all. But do you think maybe on another live stream we could talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to.
Yeah, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we ended, or?
Well, I think I'm all talked out. How about
okay.
you? I mean, did
I am.
You have anything?
No, I didn't have anything to add. I just kind of wanted to add that thing about STEAM. I'm not trying to get down on it, but I just don't think it's good if you have to wait a few days before you join a site. I think it should be right away. I like things that are transparent. If you have to wait, that's a bad sign to me. Right off the bat, like, that's what I didn't like about it. I didn't like that they were posting propaganda there. I guess that's just what I wanted to close on. So, you know, people should look into it if they're interested, but I thought it looked very, the website's not put together well. It was clunky. It didn't load well, and then you had to wait a few days. So I wouldn't recommend that site. So,
well, do you have any information about the cryptocurrency aspect of it? Because I haven't even looked into it.
I'll have to look into that. I mean, if you want to look into it, maybe it's something that would be interesting. But what I didn't like was just having to wait a few days. Like, I really don't like when a site makes you wait. And they didn't really tell me why I had to wait. So I just – maybe they have their rationale for that, but – I just felt kind of like, okay, why am I waiting? And then they're like, yeah, now you're verified. I guess that just kind of was a turnoff for me. And then when I saw people posting propaganda and fighting with each other, I'm like, okay, I don't know about this one. It just kind of reminded me of Bubble Ooze. I got this very
well,
Bubble
yeah,
Ooze.
If it's anything like Bubble Ooze, I don't want to join.
Yeah, I don't – maybe we can ask some other people and see what they say, but no, I have a pretty good intuition about these things. And I kind of was iffy about Bubble Ooze when I joined them as well, but it didn't turn me off as much. But, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be joining a lot of new sites anymore. I would rather we just focus on our own websites that we have and promote those more. I think that's probably the better approach because we've already invested in those things and we own them and
right.
we have control over how they're ran and things like that. So, but that's
yeah,
just
I
my
agree.
Preference. Yeah, so... But anyway, it was interesting, all the different topics you had to share, and I hope you have a good night, Aya.
Okay, good night, Julia.
Okay, bye.
It was a great talk.
It was
bye.
Great. Yeah, bye.